bienvenidos. You can switch it.
Bienvenidos a 55.
No, I say bienvenidos. We all know how pronunciation works for this podcast.
All right, John Yegus.
Hey, he's from Europe. That's fine with me.
I'm pretty sure that Slovakia never really oppressed anyone. So they just...
You never know.
Bienvenidos to the 55.1 podcast. I'm Wes Burdine, and I am joined by Corey Schreppel, Mark Fangmeyer, Rodrigo Sanchez Chavarria, and Graham Gilson is joining us on this podcast, making it a five-some. Graham, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
We appreciate having you on. Your lovely partner donated money to the Sané Foundation. We had two winners this year of our kind of donation thing that we give away, but you did the real donation here, and you're joining us, and we're going to talk about some soccer together. But we need to do some icebreakers here. So, you're a doctor, right?
I'm a doctor of medical physics.
Well, that's right. Like, I'm so a doctor of philosophy.
Not a medical doctor, a physics doctor.
You're still more useful doctor than I am. So, right. And that, like, basically you are in charge of, like, the fancy machines at the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I work in radiation oncology. I am in charge of, like, quality assurance, making sure our cancer patients are treated accurately with the right dose, a lot of safety, radiation safety stuff.
Well, I think on behalf of all of us and yourself, we can all say fuck cancer. And great to have you on the podcast. And you have no, like... rooting interest in soccer teams other than Minnesota. You have one true love, and that is Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
I joined the soccer fandom, I suppose, when Minnesota joined MLS. So I grew up probably like playing soccer and being interested in it, but it wasn't until we got a team here in Minnesota. And then I have a really close friend who is a huge Atlanta United fan. And so we kind of came into the league at the same time together. And I got to watch his team. Yeah, yeah. I got to watch his team succeed and our team fail. So,
yeah.
But last season was nice.
So Graham, do you... In your household, do you cheer every time Brad Guzan gets scored on? Because in my household, that's all we do. And so...
Oh, yeah. Yeah. A lot of schadenfreude when Atlanta United is losing.
Well, we are on this podcast. We're going to talk about the continued failure of Minnesota United FC, this time at the hands of Matthew McConaughey. And we've got we decided for the news roundup, we're going to go all good. So let's hit all the good news, comrades. Manchester United fans stormed the stadium this week and caused the postponement of the United match against Liverpool. The total number of peaceful protesters was like 100 or 2. And the worst they did was like throw a tripod. But Rebecca Lowe, Robbie Musto, and Robbie Earl. Oh, and not Adrian Healy. Who's the other guy with the nay? That dude with the blonde hair who wears turtlenecks and things. They like gave this breathless play-by-play of the shocking and disgusting violence against the tripod. If the year has taught us like anything, it's that incidental violence of protests is nothing compared to the polite violence of capitalism. But I just want to say to all fans out there, if someone tries to destroy your team, then you should fight back and you should throw tripods and do worse than that. So I was listening to that, watching it in the bar and just yelling at the TV. It was so stupid. Anyway.
If you've seen the way that most media people treat their own gear, it's totally fine.
The one thing I loved about like the play-by-play commentary and like were just how
angry Arsenal fans were to not have their match commentary going. It was so good. Like, the only reason I wanted them to do the play-by-play, as bad as it was, is to make it so that Arsenal fans would still just have to watch their match on a split screen with, like, no commentary for their match, which is... I'm there for it.
I sent a screenshot of the dual screen, you know, pearl clutching on one screen with just the silent Arsenal match on the other one to a coworker of mine who is an Arsenal fan in London. And he's like, oh, I would be so pissed if I couldn't listen to that.
Oh, yeah. And Rodrigo Newcastle was playing too, weren't they?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's an old. Thank you. That was probably the best thing that happened that morning, was not be able to see most of that game, even though I lost a bet because of that game. But regardless, I think one of the funniest things for me was when, like, the fans got in and, like, besides throwing a couple tripods, they didn't have anything else planned. So they just stood and, like, just walked around, and, like, they were, you know, and there were kids there too. So, like, and then, like, some other fans after they left, some people still stayed in the stadium. And if, I don't know if you remember, like, if you ever watch, or if you were old enough to watch Benny Hill films where, like, they're chasing each other around, right? And you have the exactly. It's like, that's all you saw, was like fans leaving from one end, going down the stairs, and watching the police be so kind and nice to them. Like when can we get that kind of policing? Like, I love someone just to just show me my way out and be like, oh, come this way. Or you know, it's just that, you know, if that was the case, then I go into Allianz all the time. That was the way I was.
The difference is the neon vests. That's really it.
I also want to know, like, there are a couple guys inside that had, like, beers. Like, did they bring those with them, or did they, like, actually go somewhere and, like, 100%. Steal the beers?
No, they brought.
A lot of them were at, like, pubs and stuff beforehand. Anyway,
I'm going to move on to the other good, which is hot off winning the double in Austria. Jesse Marsch is going to take over RB Leipzig next season. Jesse is the brother of Craig Marsch, who's the bartender at Milwaukee's Highbury Bar that I used to drink at. So I feel like this is a win for me as well. I feel pretty close to Jesse.
You're like a soccer Kevin Bacon.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, just briefly around the leagues in Europe, because no one really cares. Like, England is pretty much done. The Bundesliga is pretty much done. Although, I guess, who gets... Frankfurt might get Champions League and things like that. Lille are still leading Ligue 1 by a point with 3 matches to go. Atleti are leading La Liga by 2 points with 4 matches to go. I will say I didn't write this down in the notes, so I can't quite remember exactly. I think FC St. Pauli are 5 points out of the last playoff spot to go up. With 3 matches to go in Bundesliga 2, which is only because they won like 12 of the last 14 games. So they're on a run, in case you want to join the 4-person or 5-person, depending on the day, St. Pauli supporters group in St. Paul. Last good news is, Rodrigo, you got this one. Sapir Berman made sports history. This is your note.
It's like we didn't plan this out. I thought you were going to be the ball. Okay, so Pierre Berman made sports history on Monday, officiating a soccer match in Israel's Premier League for the first time since coming out as transgender.
That's pretty awesome.
That is great news. Like, that was so cool.
Yeah,
and like, if you read the article, like, it goes on to, like, actually people from the league and also players trying to be supportive of this whole thing. So, like, human beings can actually be decent people. So that's somewhat, you know, nice to hear. So,
yeah, that's why we're skipping the bad news of this week. Might as well just skip with people taking back their teams and supporting one another.
Does Kevin Venegas winning NISA with Detroit City, is that considered bad news or good news?
He still has me blocked because he hates me, even though I wrote both the songs that we sing about Venegas. So kind of fuck that dude. His mom bought a copy of The Complete Darkness the first year I made that book, though. So I'll say that. I met her in San Antonio, actually. So there you go. 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon Burdine. Let's take a break, and then we're going to talk about some badass failure.
Got pieces that will make this team better already available to you. Plus, it sounds like another winger who will fit into sort of what Doyle talked about, if it's Frangipane or someone like that. But the longer this goes on, you start... Did I say it wrong? It's Frangipane.
Frangipane?
That's how they say it in Great British Bake Off.
Oh, man.
All right, who's ready for some darkness? Let's do some... real sad.
Enough of this fun.
Deep diving into sadness here. Before we do Minnesota versus the Austin Aztecs, let's do a little bit of news, because Minnesota United side, their third homegrown player, third currently, because they previously had Colin Martin as a homegrown and Harrison Heath as homegrown. So I believe this is their fifth, but third currently on their books. Aziel Jackson, who they acquired from New York Red Bulls for a third round draft pick, meaning that we're going to have another year where we will not have a third round draft pick. It's a big accomplishment that we've gone.
What are we going to do?
Yeah. And he made the bench this last weekend. And, you know, if Heath had had a sixth sub, he probably would have thrown him out there, because it got that bad. Yeah, I don't know what to say about him other than, you know, he came through Chicago's Crossfire program and
has some pretty unreal stats for his U13, U15, and U18 teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean,
so that'll translate, right?
It's a 12-year-old for the New York Red Bulls. He was putting it in.
I have some great stats when I play against 12-year-olds. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
Plus, he has amazing hair. So
we're also pretty great. We're also 3 for 3 with getting players named to the MLS Team of the Week, with Alex Ring being named in this last week. I'm surprised Brad Stuver was not named, because he had a pretty good game.
He had some nice saves too.
You want to do some watches for us, bud?
Yeah. I mean, we still got Frank Payne, aka Frangipane, if you're David Goss, aka Franco Frangipane. Most likely.
Oh, now you're Mr. Pronunciation guy.
Uh-huh. All right.
I'm sending it out into the universe. No, he's supposedly confirmed, and probably won't be joining us until after May 25th, when Talleres kind of wraps up their Copa Subamericana group stage games. But until then, he's kind of playing with them. He's been putting in a consistent, like, 60-ish minutes a match every weekend kind of form so far. And then the one thing that happened this weekend is that the one, like, big Argentinian reporter who, like, kept saying that he's going to Cincinnati has now finally said, like, oh, yeah, he's going to Minnesota. But read my article for why he's not going to Cincinnati. So apparently there's drama there. I don't think there was, but he should be here. Hopefully by the early June, yeah, he'll be here just in time to have a 3-week break and practice with the team. So
Frank Payne doesn't know drama. Frank Payne knows pain.
I was going to say Frank Payne is drama.
I thought you were going to throw
coming
in like
to
a
CBS on Thursdays.
Joke,
so. Frank Payne.
Frank Payne only knows Yo Mama jokes. Yeah.
And we've got, sounds like Adrian Unu is probably not going to be available for the Colorado game, but he might be available for the Vancouver game. Or
he very, very might be here for Dallas, if not Vancouver.
Yeah. Okay. You ready to do this? So Minnesota United, we're hosting Austin, and this is now their third game ever. They won last week on the road to the Colorado Rapids, 3-1. And they come here. And they're feeling it. I met up with some journalists and some fans, and they talk as if their team is good. I was hanging out with some of them the night before, and I was like, "Oh boy, you're an expansion team. You're about to feel some real pain." But I was not saying this stuff. I was being polite. And then they kicked our ass, right? They just completely dominated this game. What was the possession stats? Like they had
it's like 60-40, I think, right?
60-40. Yeah. It felt like in the first 15 minutes, I thought we had one touch of the ball, something like that. I don't know exactly where to start from this. I'll start with the fake positive thing of, was there a man of the match in this game?
No.
Not for us.
Really? Okay.
Who was the best player out there? Who could you give the nicest golf clap to?
Michael Boxall.
Okay.
I mean, basically in this whole like three match stretch, we would have given up twice as many goals if it wasn't for Michael Boxall. So, and he did it again. Like there was one period towards the end of the match where literally he was chasing a guy down the our right flank on the sideline. Guy kind of got past, beat him a little bit, centered the ball to someone that was just off the corner of the 6-yard box. And no one was really stepping up to him. And so Michael Boxall ran all the way across to get him, like literally covering the entire field. Like I'd say Michael Boxall, like everyone else kind of looked just garbage is too harsh of a word, but like just so much lack of enthusiasm and just like general, like just awful, just no energy. Like it's tough.
I think for me, the only, I would say like my man of the match, which is the threshold is very, very low, would be Hassani Dotson. He's played out of position. He's trying to figure stuff out. He's trying to link up with Reynoso. He's trying to track back and cover for Chase. He's trying to learn a lot, and you could see him fighting and fighting and fighting and not getting anywhere. And that effort doesn't go unnoticed. So that's Hassani Dotson for me.
I'll go Dotson with you on that as well. You know, obviously in his left wing position, which should be a war crime to do that to him. He was not particularly effective there, but he was the only guy who was able to continue to try to create something. And once he was pushed into that central attacking role, he looked good. He was trying to take the ball and dribble and kind of move it forward. And I think that most of the other players just stopped trying to create at that point. And then you just had the subs come on, and that was the damn the torpedoes period.
I liked Dotson. I agree. He like really, I don't know. I feel like it took him 15 minutes to get into the game, but then once he did, he was present. But I think Reynoso, like all our offense goes through him. So it's hard to say he's not the man of the match when all our offense goes through him. He just stopped playing because he was injured. I mean, he started the whole game injured, but even playing through an injury, I feel like he still was our most dynamic player.
I mean, I was going to say Dotson, but I'm going to go with Cecilio Dominguez. That was the man of the match. The number 10 that kept on falling over every time he got touched by anybody that was in the Minnesota United kit. But overall, I mean, Dotson is the person that, as Corey mentioned, is trying to play on that left side. And right now, there's a lot of trust issues with Reynoso, not trusting anyone to play anywhere. In a matter, except for Lude. And so it's a little bit frustrating trying to figure out what is the best way to do things. And then we'll talk about what else is frustrating. But overall, I mean, I think Dotson put in the best effort in a sense. I think DSC also had some really good saves, but he gets getting put out to dry. And every time they score on him, it's not because he can't save the ball. It's because he's put on an overload 2-1, and he really has no time to reaction. So
yeah. Well, I want to ask this because it's related to the Dotson thing. We mentioned Lude. He was out because I think he got up too big of a purple nurple at some point in training. And so you lose him, and you've got Dotson on the left. You've got Finley back in on the right. You know, Chase continued to start, and then we had Bonchope start. are we tied into this tactic in a way, you know, with not just the 4-2-3-1, but also with this high pressing and with we have seen Heath try different, not necessarily formations, because he only briefly tries those. They work and then they stop working. But really, he has tried doing the high press and then trying to kind of dial that back. But it seems like he is really tied to it so far this season. And I just wonder what we make of how he kind of decided to you know, employ his players out there when he doesn't have a left winger, right? He doesn't have a fully fit number nine. And, you know, we don't really have the same mix of Ozzie and Gregouche.
Yeah, it just seems like, I mean, when I talked about this when we signed Abila, is that we talked about like how Minnesota wants to play, how Heath wants them to play, is to be a high pressing team who works the ball with a lot of possession to create scoring opportunities. You can't do that with Abila because he doesn't press. Like, he's old and he's slow. And he literally just stands there. And I said this when we signed him. I was like, he's never going to high press for us. And we saw exactly what it was. So the tactics just baffled my mind. Like, how do you so half-ass the tactics in that, like, all right, well, we're going to high press, but we're not going to have the one guy high press. He's just going to stand over here. And then we're going to maybe have, like, Ozzie or someone else come up and high press. It makes no sense. It's like, at some point, you have to say, all right, we have injuries. We haven't gotten our two biggest offseason signings completed yet. And we're shorthanded right now. And we just need to do what we did that was successful when we're shorthanded, which is bunker and counter. And they're just not doing that. And it's just, at some point, it becomes embarrassing for Adrian Heath, because how many times can you do the exact same thing and expect a different outcome? Because right now, he's 0 for 3.
Yeah, and part of me wonders, you know, we didn't have Abila in for preseason or most of it. And what I'm seeing with these starting lineups isn't even so much man management or minute management. It's like he doesn't know what pairings he wants. And instead of going for consistency, so looking at like a Jan Gregouche and Ozzie in the center of the park, and then bringing in Trapp as a sub to then toy with it. So, you know, do you take Ozzie out at 60 minutes and throw in Trapp? And then the next match, same midfield pairing as the 6 and the 8, but you take Gregouche out and then you pair the two of them. He's starting different pairs in the midfield. And I don't know what the reasoning for Gregouche was, but that to me, yes, we have all of these injuries that, you know, it causes a couple of different center back pairings, which leads to individual errors because of lack of communication, lack of familiarity, all this stuff. But for me, the crux of it is who's sitting behind our you know, Bebelo and our attackers. And that lack of consistency is an issue. And it's like Heath is tinkering more than I think we've ever seen him tinker, because I think he has three solid options there. But instead of leaning on the consistency that we established from last season, the consistent one is Trapp right now. And that hasn't been working to try to build that chemistry to see which one works best. So that's problem number one for me. And the winger thing, like I don't, yeah, Dotson on the left is not going to work. Just like Rasmus Schuler as an inverted left winger didn't work. None of that has ever worked for us. And I think that'll iron itself out. A lot of these things will iron themselves out because we'll have our depth back. But the thing that still frustrates me so much about this team right now and our tactics is give the ball to Roman Metiner, run it down the flank, and send in hopeful crosses into a box where nobody is making the run, because Fat Drake isn't pressing.
Fat Drake, is that what you call Manchope?
Yeah.
That's good.
It's not working. And I mean, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about that passing network that we're, you know, we brought up the graphic of our passing network. Manchope is only only has a touch with Reynoso. That's it. That's the only back and forth.
Yeah, I'll quickly describe just like, that before you go, Rodrigo.
Go ahead.
If people go to the game and you look at the stats page, it has this great little passing network to show where the most common connections are for the Minnesota players, and it just shows the only line to Wanchope is just a thin line going from Reynoso to Wanchope. It's not from the fullbacks to him. It's not to Metnier to him. It's not from Finley. It's just he's got one line. He's dangling by a thread.
Well, also interesting on that chart is that Finley, the only line to him is Metnier. So Finley only gets passes from Metnier as well. So that's all bad.
I don't really understand what the goal is with Abila. There was this off-season Q&A with Heath, and he was asked a question like, you have had kind of total choice of every type of striker at this point. What do you want? And I remember his answer was like, he wants a David Villa type of striker. Like, that's his ideal. Which I didn't watch a ton of him, but like, I think he's, you know, try hard, run fast, get behind the lines. And that's not what Ramon Abila.
It's all right. Mark Frenmeyer will tell you. Wanchope. I don't remember that Q&A. That David Villa answer is pretty fascinating because who would be the striker that we've had in all of our years under Heath, who you guys would say is closest to that, to David Villa?
I mean, maybe Amaria.
For like a second.
The first two or three matches of last season before the Orlando tournament, maybe kind of.
Maybe Toy,
Toy in his what is it, three games or four games in a row that he was really effective.
But most of his goals always came from distance, so
yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
But definitely not Abila, right? I mean, no. I can agree that is not
not him, not Rodriguez, not Ramirez, not Don Lotti, none of those, none of our strikers.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing too is that. Everyone knows how to play Minnesota United. Like, they know what they're going to do. Like, it's been telegraphed, right? Last year, the nine games that we got with Reynoso, no one able to figure out how he plays and what kind of player he is long gone now. Now, everyone knows that the best way to do anything against Minnesota is to contain or put a body, be physical with Reynoso. If the ball is going to come down the right, and so make sure that you have someone trying to pinch in supporting the right side, and then counter to the left, right? I mean, that is technique 101. How do you go and play against Minnesota? You bunker and you go and switch. We saw Seattle do it beautifully, switching the field from one side to the other to the left side to attack Chase. And I think one of the things is like, the formation discipline or the lack thereof is just one of the things that's a tactical thing that frustrates me the most, because you start Ozzy, but there seems to be no communication in who what does what. And then when we're doing a high press, there needs to be communication, specifically when you have Ozzy pressing high, then it just really doesn't really work that well. Like, if you're going to have both of them there, then you need to be able to have some sort of understanding and some sort of discipline in that matter. And I think the other thing too, and which is the tactical thing, is like, and I don't know if someone has talked to Metanier, but we all saw before the 17th minute goal that Cruyff, that he did to nutmeg the Austin defender and literally take it down the line. He is a great 1v1 dribbler.
Mm-hmm.
So dribble in the goal. Dribble in the box. Take the ball in the box. We've said this many times last year. Metanier is effective mostly you know, really good when he can dribble into the box and create chaos. When you can't move the center back, when you can't move the defensive line out of their shape, then you make it real simple. When you're crossing the ball 10, 15 feet away or 10 yards away from there, it makes it very predictable. You don't really have to be able to move that much. And it's frustrating to see that that's the way that you've asked. And you know that's a tactical thing that someone can fix. And there seems to be no way of doing that.
Before we jump on the defensive issues, I want to highlight one other positive of Metnaer specifically. When the kids came on and Dotson was playing centrally, I think it was around like the 69th-ish minute, Metnaer had this super sexy through ball from about the halfway line that got into the box and hit the feet of, I don't remember if it was McMaster or Weah, but it was brilliant. And then like it showed his vision and the communication and what he can do. But yeah, I mean, we couldn't finish it off, but we also didn't create that many chances like that. At least from his perspective. So that's what I want to say about him.
Well, let's hit that defense every week. So far the defense has been nice about taking turns on who's going to be asked that week. We had Brent Coleman had his turn. Chase Gasper had his turn. This week, Roman Metnaer pulled the ass straw, and he was terrible. He was garbage. I know that there was kind of a discussion online about who is to blame for the goal, and like, oh well, Ozzy's too high up. The cross came in, and it was a speculative, just like put it out. It's a counterattack. Roman Metnaer, it comes right by him. All he has to do is put his foot on the ball and make it go away, and he doesn't. And then Diego Fagundes, snot-nosed punk Diego Fagundes, puts it in the goal. That kid is like, he's like 23 going on 75, and he scored against us. It pisses me off. There was other parts in the game. He did have that amazing turn that early on in the game that I'd forgotten about. But there were other parts in the game where he was just the balls were him and Chase just going right by them, just like they have been the last year and a half. And we didn't get hurt enough last year about it by it. But this time we're getting hurt pretty bad.
See, I don't put that goal on Metnaer in that.
The ball crosses. It goes too high.
No, here's the thing.
How?
Here's the thing. You have to go all the way back. So, like I said, like go all the way back to where it's
to the beginning of time. Where, yes. In essence, we're all communally responsible.
No, but here's the thing. Like, because all right, the ball is played out by Brad. I'm on a first name basis with their goalkeeper because yeah, I know he's me pretty too. Awesome.
I was there. I was next to you. Yeah, I got it.
So Brad has the ball. Passes it to the a central midfielder, basically their number six. Ozzy steps up to the midfielder. Mm-hmm. Midfielder passes it back to Brad. Ozzy chases Brad to the six-yard box.
Cool.
Brad sends the ball out to the center of the field. It's basically like right in the center circle, which for whatever reason, Trapp isn't covering for Ozzy. He's still up pressing. So now you have Boxel coming in and having to push up into where the defensive midfielder should be.
Cool.
So now they get the ball, put it out wide, and they put a nice ball past Chase.
And then what happened next, Mark?
And all of a sudden, now you have two Austin players completely crashing the net, and you have Metnaer, who's responsible for covering for Boxel and for...
No, there's one player.
It was
running.
One player.
There was another guy in front of him too that was also crashing.
The ball comes and it touches Metnaer's feet. It grazes his toe, and he doesn't do anything with it. And it goes to snot nose punk Diego Fagundes. You can say yes, I get it. Leanne Stuver, who's Brad's mother, seems like a great woman. She is also to blame for that goal because she created that beautiful man.
It was actually Ron Stuver.
Yeah.
Ron Stuver is the father of the matriarch. He is the one who is in charge.
Okay. Well,
isn't there a Ron character in Harry Potter?
Yeah. Yes, there is. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It's all a conspiracy.
It's all interconnected.
So in essence, yes, there's many ways that we could go back. The ball, the effing ball goes past Chase. And it goes to Roman, and he doesn't get rid of it. It is not a good cross. It's not a great counter. It's an easy chance to just get the ball out of there.
I thought it was a good cross.
Yeah. I think it's a good cross too.
Actually, there was a completely opposite field, outside the box, and he hits him in stride and puts it in, on the volley. It was a very good cross, and it was a very good shot.
Only because, somehow Roman Manier took his body and split his atoms and did this thing where his body went apart, like the T-2000, and the ball went through him. And then he formed his body again, only to look at at Diego Fagundes scoring the goal. It is 9,000,000% Roman Metnier's. I don't care where you want to go back to.
Here's the thing if I'm gonna just try to get all of my parents to stop fighting for a second, Rodrigo, you had a really good point where we aren't maintaining our defensive shape. That's number one is the biggest issue with that, is that we are not covering. It comes down to the whole thing with, Ozzy and Trapp don't have that partnership like Grey Goose and Ozzy had. They don't know who's supposed to be doing what. That's why Ozzy was playing up in Austin's 6-yard box half the time. But it's the same blueprint for every single goal, or several, at least half of the goals that we've given up this season. They get it out wide to the left. Chase is either backtracking because he's playing too high, or he's not pressing or applying pressure to that person. If he was applying pressure there, that cross would have actually been a bad cross. It was a good shot across the front of goal. The other issue is that Metnier is not communicating with Dane, so the two of them can create the angles to shut down that goal, because Dane could have stopped that goal if Metnier... Yeah, I think he could have. I think he could have stopped that goal. If Metnier would have timed his run a little bit differently. But
it's not Quidditch. He doesn't have a broom to go and swat it with. No, there is no way. There is no way that he was going to be able to do that one.
You mean come out and get it? Or do you mean...
No, but I mean shut down the angle a little bit, because he's got Metnier just running straight at him. There's only so much you can do. Anyway.
Right, but if you're DSC... And you trust your defense, and you trust your players.
I don't think he does.
You should not trust your defense.
I don't think he does. I think that's the issue.
Trust someone to be able to get to be able to stop an incoming cross that way. That's one thing. And I understand the whole thing, but I'm gonna put this because we talked about the high press and everything else. I'm gonna put this in Star Wars terms, in a sense. Right?
Thank you.
Thanks for getting geeky with us.
Hi.
This is coming out on Star Wars.
High press. Do or do not. There is no try. So either you do it or you don't. Because if you don't have the personnel, and we don't have the personnel right now to high press. I mean, we don't have a forward that'll run for it, right? We don't have some sort of pairing in the middle, whether it's double pivot with the 6 or a double pivot with the 8 that's willing to provide pressing aspect. If we can't do it, then we shouldn't be doing it, right? I mean, we've seen what we tried to do in 3 games. It somewhat worked with Seattle, but it only works for the first 20-25 minutes, and then we're gassed. And then we're just waiting for someone to go ahead and just do what everyone else knows that they should do.
I feel like you look at this goal, and you guys have put blame on the players, different players, but I think it's a Heath goal, because... what you've got is...
That's a classic 55-1 move. You are a pro now, yes.
I'm here. I'm part of the team.
You're hired.
Yeah, let's go.
We don't pay
so,
well.
Yeah. Ozzy is way out of position, and when have we ever seen him pressing all the way up the field? So he doesn't do that normally, so he wouldn't be up there if it weren't instructions for him to be doing that. And same with Trapp. Trapp's way out of position, so unless... I just don't understand how we end up in a position where both our holding number 8s or our 6s are way up the field, and then we have to have our center backs come out to press or come out to, try to stop the attack, which failed. And then, we're left with Metnier and Gasper, who just, they've shown time and again that they just aren't good in those situations.
So we all agree that Metnier is completely to blame on this. And I want to move on to the next point, which is we did see the kids come out. Eventually this game became kitchen sink, which I think is uncharacteristic for Heath, right? The, most of the time, everyone's like, just fucking throw out Patrick Weah. I think at one point, Mark actually said that next to me. And then, like, lo and behold, a minute later, Heath is like, well, Mark just said I should put in Patrick Weah, so fuck it, why not?
I saw Foster warming up, and I thought it was like Montgomery. Like, I was like, I actually have no idea what he looks like. And I was like, who's that white dude with the good haircut? Like, who is he? And also, he comes in. I was like, did not see that one coming.
Yeah. So we saw Foster the People. We saw Justin McMaster. We saw Graham McMaster Flash. And we saw Patrick Weah, who I don't have a good nickname for, but I do want to find some way to sing the Flipper song about Weah. They call him Weah, and I don't have anything else to it. But I'm just putting that in the ether because I want someone.
What if his goal celebration after he does that is just him like
doing that? That's a seal.
Yeah, I'm not going to try to make that dolphin. Make the dolphin noise.
So we saw them out there. Patrick Weah is a big dude. And one thing I actually noticed is that Austin Aztecs are a tiny team. Like their second tallest player is Matt Beisler, who, because of arthritis and rickets and being old as fuck, is only like 6 foot tall now.
I hear he was playing with like 9 cases of shingles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a little bit of gout.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was pissed off because he had to miss Tucker Carlson. So these guys come out there, and it's weird because it's hard to like attribute too much positivity to them, because like once you put them out there and everyone's like so desperate for a point, that then things start happening because it's chaos, and it wasn't good chaos. So I want to maybe look at who impressed you from that group.
McMaster, every time he's come in, he's
been consistent.
He got the assist to Lid last week. Mm-hmm. He's creating chances. He has, I don't want to call it vision, but he's got an IQ for the game from that left wing that nobody else on our starting options has. And I would be really, really surprised if he didn't start against Colorado.
Although one thing that was really weird is that he was actually playing on the right. Like McMaster was on the right.
He did, yeah.
It was a really weird formation in that, like, we basically, again, like the whole throwing the kitchen sink.
Dude, Hassani Dawson as a 10, McMaster, who's a left winger, but he's a left footed player, right? So he can come in. He was on the right. You had,
Foster technically, the People. Weah was on the left, but he was so central. It was almost like we were just playing with like two forwards and a right winger, and then like Dotson as a 10 was what we were kind of playing. It was weird. It's almost like we just like completely gave up. We're like, we don't have anybody playing the left, so let's just
kind of like it was kind of like a 4-1-5.
Yeah.
Patrick, everybody go up. Just
yeah.
And who cares? I will agree that McMaster Flash was very good. He's the only one who I saw not just be exciting, but also be technically good, which is, you know, Weah came in and did have a chance on goal, which was great. But the rest of his touches were definitely like, oh, this guy's young. He needs time, right? I mean,
he's 17.
Yeah, so I was very glad to see him out there. It's really fun to watch that, and people were excited. Because finally, late in the game, people got excited about the game. I was like, just depressed by minute 50. So we got excited toward the end of the game because of those guys. I will say Foster the People was the only one I was upset about, because you do have Agudelo out there, and we haven't seen much of Agudelo yet. He wasn't very good last game, but he still is a decent player. And Foster Langsdorf was terrible in this game. If Wanchope was garbage in the first half, Foster was equally... He had several chances to just control the ball, and he was bad.
Go ahead, Mark.
I was going to say, at least as far as the game plan goes, if you're going to be a high pressing team and that's what your game plan is, at least he can do physically do what the game plan is. So there is that bonus
He has a physical body and he occupies space
and he can
by
move
being
it.
Matter.
Yeah, his knees aren't fused together from arthritis.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I appreciate if you're getting your ass handed to you and you just want to put in hey, guy, here's your shot. Go take it. And he's like, I'm going to run around and do something. Like, all right, fine. And that's basically what you got from him. You basically had an Australian beer can running around and doing whatever he can because he's like, this is my one chance. And it's just like a big oil can of beer just going everywhere. And that's all you had. And it's fine. It was
Australian for striker.
Australian for
shit. Now you're getting into the two United's bids.
I thought he was sloppy out there, but I'm just judging him on that one moment, like his movement into the box to get his head on that. He absolutely trucked their defense or that defender there. I forget the guy's name, but man, he wanted that goal and he went for it. So I thought that was nice to see from a 17-year-old, maybe just young enough to not know any better out there.
And that's not what we see in the box that often. If you're going to have useless crosses being thrown in, you might as well have someone that's just going to smoke some defenders and get on the end of the ball before they do.
Yeah, that's how crosses work, right? I mean, you got to have someone that can hit the ball, right? I mean, you cross the ball to someone.
No, not with this team, Rodrigo. This team,
right? It's Juan Chope needs Nickelodeon moon shoes to be able to get any height anymore.
Look, so before we get all the Boca Junior podcasts and totally trolling us and putting us out to dry on some sort of social media campaign, do you want Juan Chope to keep on starting or at least getting minutes? What is your thing? Also, that's one thing. Second of all, I've talked about in this podcast before that what if Reynoso gets hit by a bus scenario that we all kind of ignored and ba-boom, on the 67th minute, we had the scenario where we had that happen and we didn't have a backup plan because Lude was our backup plan, right? And he was injured.
But Lude's not.
And Hayes was our backup plan and he was injured. So that is all the chaos that we got from all that.
There's a lot more we could discuss in this game. I wanted to there's a lot to discuss about how who possesses the ball and moves it forward and how we do that, because we have a lot of people who are pretty good at making good probing passes. I think Trapp has actually been really good at that, but we have no one who moves the ball forward. And Molino would help that, right? Because you had Molino and Lude as threats, Lude's not moving the ball forward as much, but because you had them as threats, the other teams couldn't just focus on Reynoso. And, if you've got a striker in there who can actually occupy space and time, then you have fewer opportunities to just key in on Reynoso. We don't have anyone moving it forward. That's why Hassani Dotson is at least okay in that role. He's not creative enough to replace Reynoso, right? But at least he's one of those people that you want out there in some way, which is why maybe I'm sympathetic to Heath putting him on the left, because at least he takes the ball and moves it forward. Otherwise, we get in these problems where Reynoso has to come to the ball and then he's got to move it forward. And where is he going to? And he's going to the big stone brick guy in Juan Chope. But I want to say just one other thing about the kids. In the one real bummer I have, we've seen it before where Heath has put out a bunch of kids and they've gotten their chance. And it always happens in, well, we're fucked anyway type moments. Like we've seen, when Chacon got his one start, right? It was like, well, we've got 30 injuries and we're playing in Houston in August, 2 p.m. So let's just let's throw Chacon out there and make him create some stuff. And that's like, I don't want to see Patrick Weah get his chances that way. Because Graham, you're talking about that was a good chance and you want to see that guy out there. But I want to see Patrick Weah brought in a way that is helpful for him. Not in fuck it, I can't put Johnny Agudelo out there because he doesn't listen to me in practice and everyone has a bad attitude. So whatever, kid, go score a goal. That's not how we develop players. And I'm struggling to think, will Patrick Weah get other good, substantive, would we see him come in this weekend? No, I don't think so. Unless it's another desperate situation where it's like, fuck it, let's put some nails in this gun and see if it blows up. It's a weird analogy, I know. Okay, we need to. We've gone on this game quite a lot. The Uruguayan league starts next week, and we should recall Chacon. Let's take a break, and we've got 7 more hours of programming. Stay with us, everyone. Back on the 55-1 podcast. Here we go. We do want to say that Minnesota plays the Colorado Rapids this Saturday at 9 p.m., right? It's a 9 p.m. game. So It's an away game, obviously, and we'll have it on at the Blackheart. So I will be there being sad, hopefully with other friends. So I don't know. Are we going to get a... So this is from Jim Oliver in our Slack. Sure, the Rapids are going to beat us, but will there be a fight? Miguel Ibarra used to get in those fights, but...
I think if we can get Miguel, who is, I think, currently on vacation in Mexico, I think he, if we can get him there, you know, sign him to a one-day contract, I think we can get a couple red cards. But I mean, Colorado has a chance. So, like, the biggest thing, so they played Vancouver, beat Vancouver 1-0. Vancouver is our following opponent, and they've just not been great. But the only goal that came from this match was Rubio from Colorado on a free kick. Great goal. But the biggest thing that Colorado has, they have some like real attacking power on the counter. They do have Cole Bassett, who is one of the better young players in the league. You got Shinashiki on the left or on the right, who will be lining up against Gasper. That could be a big problem for us, given the way that teams have been, what their game plan is against us. You've got Barrios, who played for Dallas last year. He lined up on Colorado's left, our right, so he'll be up against Metnair. He's got some speed there. It could be bad. It could be bad if we keep... Cool. Doing the same exact thing that we've been doing the last couple of matches. So if we don't shore up our defense, keep the shape, and then keep that midfield tight, I think it could be bad for us.
So let me go to some Twitter questions here that are related. This is from Lee. Chacon cursed the club on his way back to Uruguay, didn't he? And the obvious answer is yes. What will break the Chacon curse?
Like Chacon
40 years from now,
starting a match.
No, 40 years from now, when we're finally like, we need to break the Chacon curse. What are we going to have to do? Like drink some mate with like blood in it at the end line or something like that? Or
no, I think it's going to require lots of mate drinking in addition to surfing and what is called Uruguayan asado, the big old like just a bunch of like random things that you're gonna have to do, you know. But I mean, and you know, we'll see what Liverpool FC does, how he does over there. But I mean, can you blame him if he did curse us? Could you really?
No,
I know I can.
We've earned it. I mean, I did not because I was keeping the faith, but everyone else earned it. David Naylor says, how many times have you watched the replay of David Zeller getting smacked in the face over the last 40 hours? We didn't talk about it much on this podcast because I'm pretty sure the Daves I know is going to do a full 90 minutes recap of just that one moment. But Emmanuel Reynoso put a ball really hard over the net, and David Zeller was, he had a couple drinks. And he's right behind the goal. And the ball went right into his face. And I looked over and I was like, oh, shit. I like found his wife's phone number and texted her and was like, can you make sure that David like doesn't die tonight?
Right. And also the best was the commentary on the in-game commentary.
Oh, where
like
after
it hit him, like they went on with the game. And then like they came back and like they zoomed in on Zeller, like holding like a napkin over his nose. And Cal Williams goes, "The fan you saw struck in the face appears to be okay. Nothing a beer won't fix."
And what's funny is two people grabbed him beers after that and brought it down to him. And I was, and he, and thank God Zeller is a professional. And he was like, "Well, I've been concussed before. I'll drink these another time." So, but what's funny is like, no one really checked on him.
It's
like
not the first time.
Destroyed his face. Like I saw him the next day and his eyeball was like red. And like the security guard kind of was like, "Is he okay?" Brad Stuver, crazily enough, we have not talked about Harry Potter aficionado Brad Stuver.
You're a wizard, Bradley.
Brad actually checked in on him, which was more than anyone from the team did. Like no one from the team even like followed up with him.
But also in the team's defense, like if you watch the replay of it, like Brad like followed the ball the whole way and just saw it smack. I'm like, yeah. Everyone else is like, "Oh, it went over." And
didn't pitch. But like I mean, even like, no one from the staff checked in on him. Yeah, like, no, was, the goalkeeper yeah, no, was and, like, "Hey, are you okay?" Yeah. Anyway,
it was basically great. It just confirms that everything we know about Brad is that he is one of the most decent and wonderful human beings on earth.
Pure hearted.
That we don't deserve him in our presence, really. No, he's just don't. So great.
He's a Hufflepuff.
Yeah. Sure.
We had a great time mocking him because we were like 15 feet away from him. You were in full Harry Potter garb, Mark.
I was. Yeah,
and Bruce Lair is watching.
And also somewhere, the rumor is that somewhere he has a Deathly Hallows tattoo somewhere on his body.
Yeah.
I'm going to say it's on his butt, but I'm not completely sure about that, but I think it's on his butt.
Next week, we are going to have to do not one, but two scouting reports. We've got Maxime Crépeau, who is the goalkeeper for the Vancouver Whitecaps, who I've started to do preliminary work on, and his partner, his wife, is expecting a baby like anytime now. So I feel like we can do lots of parenting advice for him. And so, we've got some work to do. Oh, he was a former teammate of Eric Miller. So I'm going to be hitting up Eric Miller for some good, deep garbage on him. I don't know. Oh, Dallas, their goalkeeper. Who do they have now? No, they don't. They don't have the, because Jesse Gonzalez is gone. I forget who their goalkeeper is now. Anyway, moral of the story is let's move on to Lucas. Lucas asks, "I think you all had Minnesota United in the top three of the West in your prediction podcast. Any of you want to change this at this point? How early is it? Is too early to panic?" And then John has a similar thing, which is, "How many games winless before Heath and Co. are out?" Yeah, Rodrigo.
Five.
Yeah, unmute and say.
All right, guys, putting your hands up on a podcast is not.
Well, we're doing the thing where we're letting Wes finish his thing so we can get a clean edit in case we need to edit.
Okay, Michael Barbaro. So, you think if we lose to the Rapids in Vancouver, then Heath will get fired?
I think that's when the biggest.
That's when you'll start panicking.
That happening, yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Heath is not getting fired at all. Sorry. Like, he's not. Like, and honestly, and he shouldn't. Like, any team that fires their coach in the middle of the season has a super shitty season after that, too. Like, there's really no
Seattle did it, and they won the MLS Cup with Brian Spencer. Just saying.
That's before my time. I don't know. I thought Schmetzer came over with the, did he come? Wait, I thought he was a head coach for them when they were in,
he was the assistant
USL.
Coach. Siggy Schmidt. No. Siggy Schmidt was their first.
Siggy Schmidt was having a terrible year.
And then they fired him. And then Schmetzer came in and they won the MLS Cup.
Okay, so that happened once.
I think now that I said it, I'm now totally, yes. Anyway, that's about
it. Either way, it would make no sense to fire a guy who. Tactically, he has been questionable, but as far as his role as the GM technical director kind of overseer guy, he's been very good. And we haven't gotten our new DP in, and we haven't gotten our new left winger in, and those are the two big signings that should have been in the offseason but haven't been. And wait and see after that, see what happens in July. I mean, honestly, if we're doing terrible, in August and September, whatever. I mean, we can probably still sneak in the playoffs and still make a run because that's how MLS works.
Here's the thing. Last season, we had four losses in a row in the summer. We lost to Orlando. We lost to Kansas City. We lost to Dallas. So it was 3-1 to Orlando, 2-1 to SKC, 3-1 to Dallas, 3-0 to Houston before coming back and winning 4-0 in September against RSL. And then that was before Reynoso came in. So
we just need to re-sign Reynoso.
Yeah, yeah. We just need to re-sign Reynoso, go through the thing. But you know what I'm saying? It's like we're hitting this like funk right off the top of the season. And a lot of it is due to injuries to our depth. I do think that if we don't get out of the month of May with a win or at least a couple of draws, I think the pressure is going to be on Heath. Even, you know, we will get our DP striker and we will get Marzipan coming in.
I do want to say start shitty and then like, oh, but now we've got our good players is like, you could start the season with your pants already on rather than be like, oh, well, I should put these pants on. But
I'm saying like there are other things that are coming to help with the depth and the injury issues.
Sure.
That I think can... That is giving Heath a little bit of that breathing room. I think if they get here and we're still tracking the way we are, it's going to be a problem for him.
All right. Graham, what's your panic level? Where are you weighing in here?
I mean, it's still, three games in. Personally, I'm not panicked. I would have to see us, like, I don't know, 10 games in, we have 5 points or something like that, something really embarrassing. And then, yeah, the season is shot, right? So you can't say after 3 games that a whole season is shot. I mean, I think there's some stat or something, maybe MLS.com had some stat that there have only been 3 or 5 teams who've started out the season with 3 losses like that.
Six teams, and 2 of them were last year when we had the extra big playoff pool. Yeah.
Yeah. So it sounds tough, like at this point, that we're going to make the playoffs, but I don't imagine that they'll fire Heath even if we don't make the playoffs this year. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
If we don't make the playoffs this year, he's gone. I think that
100%.
That's reasonable. I mean, I'm as much as I'm a... I'm a Heath out curious person. I think that Heath like had a great year last year. He proved a lot of us wrong, and like, but you got to make with this team, you have to make the playoffs every year.
It's not a regular MLS season, anyways, and so like it's even more pressure, less games to deliver on, and when you get to. If you get to be 0-5 and you lose to Colorado and then you lose to the team that Colorado beat, I mean, it's not going to get easy. We already talked on this podcast how that June stretch is going to be with all the people leaving for internationals. And if you are not at least functioning in chemistry-wise and in your formation discipline as well, it's going to get really tough to be able to keep the naysayers and keep the Heath out folk from being even louder. And that's what I'm saying. I'm saying
you're going to have to kick more balls into the stands and hit Zeller in the face to keep the Heath out.
No, we're storming the stadium.
Sterling Nelson says, clearly what we're doing isn't working. What are some of the weirdest, most out of the box, so crazy it might work ideas to get some points? New formations, players in unconventional spots. I'm just going to say we recall Chacon and play him on the left, but who's got a non-Chaconista proposal?
All right, we take Metinier. We've already said he's good at dribbling. Just put him up dual number 10s. We can, I don't know. But who cares? Put somebody else at right back. We just have dual number 10s, and then they're just passing between them. Reynoso, Metinier, back and forth. We'll win every game.
And you could see in a semi-serious version of that, you could see a Metinier as a wing back but we don't have a left. We have no one who can play on the left. And also we don't have any center backs. So well, I mean,
that's the whole thing. Like do a 3-5-2, throw one of our like mildly not hobbled, injured center backs and just put three center backs there. Put Chase and Metinera as wing backs. And then just let them play a little bit of soccer table tennis and see what happens.
I actually don't hate the idea of a 3-5-2 just because, as we've seen, like Michael Boxall has been the only breath of consistency in our back line.
Because he's the only consistent center back.
Hey, don't lower the bar too. It's bad, but like,
don't look too closely at my comments here.
Imagine him, like, he's like the center of the 3-5-2. So, like, he could just like basically like, I'm going to run to the right. I'm going to run to the left. I'm just going to cover the whole box and just be dominant. And then like, if you get in my way, center backs, I'm just going to push you out of the way anyways and just do it. And like, basically it just empowers Michael Boxall to be a complete badass. So I'm all for it.
All right. So we have Kibinguchi and Hayes in the middle.
Kibinguchi.
Then we have DJ Taylor in the defense. And then you have Boxall, and we're going with a 3-5-2 in a sense, and then Romain Mentenaire. You throw Chase because you want him to be the least amount of trouble, so you put him out somewhere on that left side and just let him run. He can't be successful on a left wing anyway, so you just let him run and do whatever he wants, and you instruct him to say, Chase, dribble into the box and pretend to cross the ball.
First of all, you have to call him Pedro. And you can only speak to him in Spanish because that will bring Pedro out. So you don't.
That's bullshit. Okay. That's not happening.
Okay. No. That's bullshit. The inner Pedro is like a horcrux that needs to be released.
No.
It's like Liu Kang's animality.
Oh, we're going to turn this to Mortal Kombat now. Just hire Scorpion and make him be our number nine. That's all we need to do.
All right. I think we hit the end. thanks everyone for sticking around. If you didn't stick around, but if you are hearing this, then someone it's like still going while you're the dishes, you've fallen over sadness or something like that. And the dishes, the water's overflowing, something like that. And your partner's going to walk in and be like, oh my God, this podcast killed them. So sorry we killed you. And I guess we should apologize to the partner. Sorry we killed your partner.
And the water damage too.
Oh yeah, that we're not insured for that. So please don't sue us. Graham Gilson, thank you for joining us on this podcast, doctor. It's good to have another doctor on this podcast. This podcast is full of you know, people just dummies. don't ever see.
Thanks guys. Had a fun time.
How many Peabody Awards do you have?
Oh shit. Bitch, please. All right, everyone. Thank you so much. We hope to see you sometime at the Black Heart, at a game, just randomly at Menards or something like that. That happens a lot for me.
It does.
Candy Isle, man.
Okay. All
Target,
right.
Midway Target. I ran into Lydia at Midway Target, so it's just everywhere.
Adios, compañeros. All right.